negative note. Then Buck disappeared and was gone for more than an hour. When he returned, he had liquor on his breath, and no one needed to tell me he'd been in the parking lot with a bottle, joking with his loser buddies. I tried not to let it bother me. This was my class reunion, and if he wanted to spend it in the parking lot making crude jokes with his friends, that was his choice. I guess some of what I'm learning at Al-Anon is finally sinking in. The highlight of the evening was dancing with Roy Kloster. Dr. Roy Kloster these days. I've known Roy nearly all my life. We met in first grade and went through the first 8 years of school together. Then he went to Marquette and I moved on to Holy Name Academy. I asked him to the Sadie Hawkins dance when we were freshmen and desperately wanted him to kiss me. He didn't. After that, we saw each other at sporting events and such, but neither of us ever had much to say. Now, 10 years following graduation, Roy confessed he'd had a major crush on me all through high school. On me. He was the valedictorian of his class, and I was the salutatorian for mine. Jillian and I had always planned to be co-valedictorians, but with the pregnancy and all, I let my last quarter's grade slide. Roy isn't married, and he came to the reunion alone. He teased me about getting the award for the 10-year graduate with the most kids. Afterward, I sat and chatted with Jillian and Cindy and Judy and some of the other girls. At one point, I found a quiet corner to sit and watch my friends, people I knew as a child. The oddest sensation came over me. I suddenly realized I was close to tears and I wasn't sure why. I've been overly emotional lately, which is understandable, seeing that I recently lost my father. But this sadness was part of something else. I guess I'd have to call it regret. Regret about bad decisions and lost dreams. From the age of 6, I thought Roy was wonderful. He doesn't remember this, but he defended me against Todd Kramer in the 3rd grade and got a black eye for his efforts. In 8th grade, he secretly put a valentine and a small box of chocolates on my desk during recess. But I always knew he was the one. What I didn't know about Roy was that he wanted to be a doctor. He never knew I dreamed of becoming a nurse. I know this is wrong, and may God forgive me. But when I first heard the news about my dad, I wished it had been Buck who'd died. I've felt guilty about that ever since. Buck is my husband and the father of my children. I married him, not Roy Kloster and not Cole Greenberg. I've got to accept reality and quit playing these ridiculous games in my mind. If I hadn't married Buck, there'd be no Davy, Lindy, Doug, or Christopher. My children are my everything. It's nearly 2 in the morning and I'm exhausted. Buck still isn't home, but I refuse to guess where he might be or with whom. It's best not to scratch too deeply below the surface, because I know I won't like what I find. I'm trying hard to hold on to the happy memories from the reunion, and not to think about anything else. I'm not going to hear from Roy again, and that's for the best. Bumper sticker on Jillian's car. Nixon's Ford. A lemon. Bumper sticker on Buck's pickup. Bozo for president. 1978. Jillian's Journal. January 1st, 1978. Dearest Nick, I'm still not pregnant. Monty and I are so discouraged. We've been married almost 2 years now. We don't know what's wrong. Both of us have been tested, a humiliating experience which we endured because we desperately want a child. I couldn't bear it if Monty and I can't have children. As you can see, I'm very distressed about this. However, my parents waited years for me, and I eventually came along. I take hope from that. Married life is surprisingly good. Monty wants me to cut back on my work hours. He believes it's the stress of my job that's keeping me from getting pregnant. I suspect he's right. And as of the 1st of the year, today, I'll be in the office only 3 days a week. We moved into a wonderful new apartment and absolutely love it. I feel this urgency to hurry up and have children. Auntie's age is a factor, and my parents' ages, too. Both my mother and father are anxious for grandchildren. Dad's turning 70 this year, and he'd like the opportunity to watch them grow up. Monty and I spent 4 days in Pine Ridge over the Christmas holidays. Last year, Mom and Dad flew to New York, but Dad hates to fly. He does it for Mom and me. He has this theory about all those germs floating around and infecting everyone unlucky enough to share the flight. His theories are often amusing. I sit and listen, nod at the appropriate times, and pretend to agree. I wonder if I'll be anything like him at that age. In many ways, I hope I am. Unfortunately, because of our abbreviated visit, I only had a few hours with Leslie. Buck was off work because of a bad back, but was feeling well enough to leave his sickbed to go bowling with his buddies. Need I say more? I can't tell you the number of times I've had to bite my tongue when it comes to the subject of Buck Knowles. Leslie is more religious than ever, which I can understand. If I was married to Buck, I'd find God, too. She's clever at crafts and sews these cute little tooth fairy pouches from leftover material. She sells them at Christmas bazaars and other craft shows. Apparently she's doing quite well with that. I wish we'd had more time. But Christopher had an ear infection and she had to take him to the doctor on the 26th, when we'd originally planned to get together. Luckily, Pine Ridge now has a free health clinic. Buck hasn't worked enough hours for the mill to cover his health insurance, so Leslie had to wait her turn, which took hours. She was there nearly all of 1 day before the doctor could see Christopher and write a prescription. I did visit the next day. David, Lindy, and Doug were so enthusiastic about the gifts I brought. So pathetically grateful, it nearly broke my heart. You'll note Davy now prefers to be called David. He's a lovely child, although that isn't generally the way I'd describe an 11-year-old boy. He's sensitive and caring, gentle-spirited and protective of his younger brothers and sister. I can already see that Lindy's going to be a handful. I don't envy Leslie, especially when her daughter hits the teenage years. Dougie is in first grade and a real charmer. Because his ear hurt, 3-year-old Christopher clung to Leslie and refused to have anything to do with me. I was sorry not to have time to visit Mrs. Adamski. Although she didn't say much, Leslie alluded to the fact that her mother's life is vastly different now that Mr. Adamski is gone. Apparently she's dating and has a regular beau. Good for her. Jim and I met Christmas Eve Day at the cemetery and placed flowers on your parents' graves and on yours, too. We were only together an hour, but as far as I could tell, he's happy. I'm delighted that he married Angie, and you would be, too. She's been good for him. It wouldn't surprise me if they made you an uncle soon. I thought that after this year I wouldn't write you any more letters. I'm married now, and somehow it didn't seem right that I should continue this. I loved you so completely, Nick. But you left me. It's been almost 10 years since you were killed. As much as I thought everything would stay frozen in that time and space, it hasn't. I've aged 10 years, and the world is changing so fast I sometimes feel I can't keep up. Most importantly, I have a husband now, whom I truly love. Still, I couldn't bear the thought of letting you go completely. At one time, you were my whole world, and I was yours. I decided this morning as I reached for my new journal that 1 day a year, just one, I would invite you back into my life. Once a year on January 1st, I will sit down and talk to you, just as if you were here with me. You see, Nick, I've discovered that life does stagger forward, and there's a certain beauty in that. Because in a way, I experience the past and the present at once. When I write you, I force myself to look back through time at the girl I was. I'm a woman now, and I'd like to think I'm wiser and a bit more pragmatic. Still, part of me continues to hold on to you. For now, that's the right thing to do. But at some point in the future, I might choose to release you. Just remember, that won't mean I've forgotten you or stopped loving you. I know this sounds a little crazy, but I swear there are moments when I feel you're with me. Not in a physical sense, but a spiritual one. It's the sort of thing Leslie probably believes. She's so into the Bible and her new church. Her life is chaotic, mostly due to Buck. But she remains outwardly calm and serene. I wish I could be more like that. Perhaps one day I'll find that serenity myself. Perhaps next year when I write to you, I'll be pregnant. That's my prayer. Until then, Jillian. P.S. You'll note that this is a journal and not just a diary. Or so the clerk at the stationery store informed me. Does that mean my thoughts and observations are supposed to become more impressive? January 15, 1978. Dearest Jillian, happy birthday! Just a short note inside this card to wish you a happy 30th. We're all doing fine. Buck still isn't working. I've learned 50 different ways to cook beans. Thank God for food banks. Write soon. Leslie. Surprise! Happy second anniversary. A little early. Love, Monty. Caribbean Cruise Specialists, Itinerary for Passengers, Jillian Gordon and Montgomery Gordon. Your ship, the Grand Prince Rupert. Thank you for booking our premier 10-day package. Welcome aboard. Leslie's Journal. March 26, 1978. This hasn't been a good day. I woke up early and sat with my coffee and my Bible in order to clear my head. It was necessary, otherwise the anger would have consumed me. Buck crawled into bed at 2 in the morning, reeking of cheap cologne and stale beer. He's doing everything I swore I wouldn't put up with. Not only is he doing it, he's flaunting it, as if he wants me to challenge him. Instead, I gather my children around me and pretend I don't notice. I'm sick of my life. Sick of swallowing my pride and struggling to hold up my head in public. God knows I've done everything I can to save this marriage. Buck is a practicing alcoholic. These days, when he's drinking, he becomes irrational and angry. He's rarely home, and when he is, he's verbally abusive to the children and to me. It's almost as if he's asking me to kick him out. I never dreamed it would take such courage. My greatest fear about staying with Buck is that the children will grow up believing this is the way a man treats his wife and family. I can't allow his ugliness to taint my children the way my father's alcoholism tainted my brothers, sisters, and me. I've got to get out of this marriage. I made a mistake 5 years ago by taking him back. But I'm stronger this time. Buck has broken every promise he's ever made to me. I deserve better. I've learned my lesson. If this is what marriage is like, then I'll never again risk such unhappiness. Leaving Buck means putting Christopher in daycare and taking a job outside the home. But I'll do it. I'd do a whole lot more than that to protect my children. Want ads. Cashier. 7 to 11 p.m. swing shift. Minimum wage to start. Ask for Jan. 784-2387. East Park Dry Cleaners seeks part-time employee. Can become full-time for right worker. $2.65. 784-2665. Oaks Convalescent Center. Housekeeper needed. Flexible hours for mother with school-age children. $2.75 per hour. Apply at personnel office. 784-7549. New York Cornell Medical Center. 505 East 70th Street, New York, New York. 10021. April 27th, 1978. Dear Mr. and Mrs. Montgomery Gordon, congratulations. It is with extreme pleasure that we confirm your pregnancy. Your expected delivery date is November 15th. Sincerely, Dr. Oliver Keast. May 1st, 1978. Dear Leslie. Okay, you've made your point. You can call off your rabid dog of an attorney. I'll agree to the terms of the divorce, but in return, I want you to do something for me. Wait. I know you're set on this divorce. I don't like it, but you have cause. All I ask, and I'm begging you, baby, is that you give me time to pull my life together. Give me one last chance to prove to you that I'm sincere. I need you and my family. Don't take my children away from me. You might not think it's true, but I love you. I've always loved you, and you can't doubt the way I feel about our children. All of you are my life. I wish to hell I knew why I do the things I do. I don't blame you for kicking me out. I suppose that's what I get for cheating on you. But you're the only good thing I've ever had in my life. Without you and the kids, I might as well give up. Think about it, please. What will 6 months matter anyway? That's all the time I'm asking. 6 lousy months. I'm going to prove to you that I can stay sober and faithful. I don't deserve another chance, but I'm begging you to give me one. In case you're interested, I'm living in Tom Cullen's basement. You might remember Tom. He and I went hunting together last fall. He's only charging me $50 a month, which is all I can afford with what the state's taking out of my check for child support. I hate the thought of you working at that convalescent home, Leslie. Our children need their mother. But if this is what you want, then go ahead. Please don't do anything rash. Give me 6 months. Is that so much to ask after nearly 12 years of marriage? Please, baby. Buck.
May 14th, 1978. Happy Mother's Day. We love you. David, Lindy, Dougie, and Christopher.
Card on bouquet of red roses. Happy 12th anniversary. I love you. Buck.
Happy Father's Day. David, Doug, and Christopher. I love you, Daddy. Lindy.
Jillian Lawton Gordon. 331 West End Avenue, Apartment 1020, New York, New York, 10023. June 15th, 1978. Dearest Leslie, I'm 4 wonderful months pregnant as of today. You can't begin to imagine how excited Monty and I feel. My parents are thrilled, and Monty's mother, who's never been quite sure about me, is leaping up and down for joy. I have a few of the negative symptoms, but I can't remember a time my appetite's been healthier. Manhattan offers the most incredible assortment of ethnic food, and currently, I'm into anything Italian. Last week, we ordered out from Balducci's 3 times. You should see Monty. He's so protective of me, it's not even funny. I guess that means dancing at Studio 54 is out until after the baby's born. As if I could ever have convinced Monty to bump and grind with what he calls the libertine elite. Have you heard of Studio 54? It's a trendy disco with strobe lights and computer program synthesizers and a drum machine. Think Donna Summers, Andy Warhol, and John Travolta all in the same place at once. I have your last letter here in front of me. You're right. I am disappointed that you've decided to delay the divorce. Do you seriously believe Buck is going to change in 6 months? He's already had 12 years. But this is your life, so I won't say any more. Still, I want you to know I'm proud of you, Leslie. The decision to separate from Buck couldn't have been easy. I don't mean to suggest otherwise. I know it's hard on the children, but as you explained, they rarely saw Buck anyway, and when they did, he was usually in a foul mood. Mom mentioned bumping into you at Oaks Convalescent Center. She was at the center as part of her work with Catholic Charities, but you probably know that. Her ladies group from the church took on the project several years ago. She said you looked wonderful and that the staff and patients already love you. When she asked her friend who works in personnel about you, Mrs. Wagner says you're terrific with the patients. Cheerful, sympathetic, and compassionate. Apparently all the retired men are in love with you. And speaking of love, remember what Roy Kloster told you at our class reunion? He's not married. Write him, why don't you? This isn't an idle suggestion. I've been thinking about it for quite a while. I've resisted the urge to contact him myself on your behalf. Don't worry. I won't. This is something you've got to do on your own. My guess is he'd be thrilled to hear from you. How are the kids? I'm glad your mother agreed to watch Christopher while you work. It helps that the three oldest can drop by her house on their way home from school, too. What would we do without our mothers? It must be a hoot to see your mother date. I can't imagine mine going out with any man other than my dad. Still, it's a good thing your mom isn't sitting at home pining after your father. What's this about her dating a former priest? I'll be able to write more often now that I've stopped working. I do intend to go back to the firm after the baby's born. Just part-time at first. Keep me informed. You're going to be fine, Leslie. Write or call me any time. What are friends for? Love, Jillian, Monty, and Junior. Pine Ridge Herald, July 16, 1978. Judge Leonard Lawton succumbs to sudden heart attack. Former Superior Court Judge Leonard Lawton, 70, succumbed to an apparent heart attack at his home on July 15th. Judge Lawton is a native of Pine Ridge and served on the bench for 25 years before retiring in 1970. As a lieutenant during the Second World War, he was stationed in the South Pacific and was decorated for bravery. He is survived by his wife, Barbara Lawton, and one daughter, Jillian, Mrs. Montgomery Gordon. Mrs. Gordon currently resides in New York City. Judge Lawton was a member of the Bar, St. Catherine's Catholic Church, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, and the Moose Lodge. The family asks that in lieu of flowers, a donation be made to the American Heart Association. Funeral services will be held at St. Catherine's Catholic Church on July 19, 1978. Jillian's Journal, August 1, 1978. Dearest Dad, I'm still having trouble believing you're gone. This was all such a terrible shock to Mom and me. When the phone call came, Monty went pale, and then he could barely tell me the news. None of this seems real or right. I know how much you looked forward to holding your first grandchild, and now you'll never have that opportunity. How unfair, how wrong. If ever a grandfather deserved to know his grandchild, it was you. You would have made such a wonderful grandpa. I know this because you were a wonderful father. We had our differences. I think back to those turbulent years during Vietnam and my radical political views while I was in college. So much of the pain and anger I felt at losing Nick was directed at you. You were the establishment that had ripped away the person I loved. Blinded by my loss, I lashed out at you and everything you stood for. It wasn't until years later that I told you how sorry I was. I cringe now when I remember the awful things I said and wrote to you. What I didn't say, I shouted with my attitude. You didn't deserve it. Daddy, I'm so sorry for hurting you and blaming you for what happened to Nick. I wanted to talk to you about him, but every time I tried, I couldn't get the words out. They sat like an anchor on my chest and refused to budge. Now I'd give anything to have settled that pain between us once and for all. There must have been things you wanted to say to me, too. You never spoke about it, but I know you regretted your attitude toward Nick. You wanted to ask my forgiveness for that. I know because of the way you've helped Jim and Nick's father. If there'd been time, you would have asked me to take care of Mom. I will. You can count on Monty and me to see to her needs. I suspect you would have wanted me to know how much you loved me. The words aren't necessary. You said it in a thousand ways. I knew, Dad. I always felt your love. I'm in Pine Ridge now, settling your affairs. I'll be with Mom for the next couple of months. I've started going through your papers, and it doesn't surprise me that everything is in immaculate order. Life won't be easy for Mom without you. She relied on you for everything. Monty and I understand that and will look after her with the same dedication you did. Daddy, I'm sorry we can't move back to Pine Ridge. I know you would have preferred that, but with Monty's job and mine in New York, that just isn't possible. Leslie has promised to check in with Mom every week and report back to me. If there's the slightest hint of a problem, I'll take care of it right away. I love you, Dad. Rest in glory. Jillian.
Dorothy Adamski, September 14th, 1978. My dearest Leslie, Susan, Mike, Joe, Lily, and Bruce, my children. I hope you can forgive me for writing instead of calling each of you personally. For reasons you will understand in a moment, I thought this was the best approach. Leslie, you've probably already guessed what I am about to tell you. Susan, you too. I've talked to you both so often in the past few weeks because I couldn't hold such happiness inside me. Mikey, I'm delighted that you've moved back to Pine Ridge. I never did understand what was so attractive about life in Las Vegas. It's a desert there, in more ways than the obvious. As your mother, I welcome you with open arms, even if it took your father's death to bring you home to Washington. Mikey, we've had many a discussion since your return, and not all of them have been pleasant, especially over the issue of my seeing Eric. Son, I know you don't think I should be dating a younger man. I agree it might seem a bit silly, but if it doesn't bother Eric and me, then it shouldn't bother anyone else. 10 years may seem like a lot, but when I'm with Eric, I feel young again. I'm happy with him. I realize it troubles you even more that Eric was once a priest. Of all my children, you're the last person I expected to be judgmental about something like this. Try to keep an open mind. Joe, although you haven't said anything negative about Eric, I've felt your disapproval. And yours too, Bruce. You boys haven't been as vocal about your feelings as Mikey. But you've made it plain you think I'm an old fool. You could be right. But if that's the case, I'm a happy old fool. In fact, I'm absolutely giddy with joy. Of all my children, it's been my three daughters who have encouraged me to live my life as I see fit. Leslie, Susan, and Lily. God love you for your support and encouragement. I'm forever grateful to each one of you for your understanding. As you know, life with your father wasn't easy. But he's gone now, and I don't intend to live the rest of my days grieving for a man who mentally and emotionally abused me. I've still got a lot of life left in me, and I intend to make the most of it. The reason for this letter is to tell you that Eric has asked me to be his wife. Yes, children, we want to marry. But there's something else you need to know. Eric isn't a former priest. He is a priest. This is a shock, I'm sure. Eric never misled me, so please don't accuse him of lying. I was the one who told you he was a former priest. I stretched the truth a bit. He's no longer connected with a parish and has been living on his own for the last 18 months. He's waiting for dispensation from Rome. Father Morris knows Eric and isn't in favor of our relationship. If you decide to talk to someone objective about the situation, I wouldn't recommend him. My children, all I'm asking is for your support and your prayers as God guides Eric and me in the direction he wants us to go. Whatever happens, I pray that all six of you will stand behind my decision. I love you all. Mom. Birth announcement. Montgomery and Jillian Gordon joyfully announce the birth of Lenny Joe Gordon. Born November 20th, 1978. 7 pounds, 15 ounces, 19 inches long. Leslie Knowles, December 5th, 1978.
Dearest Jillian, congratulations to you and Monty. Lenny Joe is a beautiful baby girl. Those pictures taken at the hospital are normally so dreadful, but I can already see she's going to be a beautiful, intelligent woman. How proud you must be. I'm glad you received the baby blanket I knitted for Lenny Joe. Every stitch was made with my love for you and your daughter. Don't you dare be afraid to use it. You're right, it's an heirloom piece. And her baptism will be the perfect occasion. Yes, I know you gave up attending church services years ago, but there's no better time to return to God, my friend. You asked about your mother and my last visit with her. I wish I could tell you she's doing better than she is. but she still seems lost and confused without your father. She does try, however, and is making progress. I've gone out with her several times and showed her how to pump her own gas. Writing checks completely frazzles her, but she's becoming more accustomed to it. I've written up a list of phone numbers and set it in a handy place in case she needs someone or something when I'm not available. Now on to my news. Yes, it's true. My mother is dating a priest, and it looks as though they'll marry. Eric, however, has to get some sort of dispensation from Rome, and that could take a few months. They're very much in love, and despite the local gossip and the disapproval from my brothers, they intend to spend the rest of their lives together. More power to them both is what I say. Buck was over to visit the children the other night. He stops by 2 and 3 times a week, but I've resisted giving him dinner. It would be far too easy to let him slip into the habit of eating here and eventually working his way back into the family without anything ever changing. The good news is that report cards are out and David got straight A's. We celebrated with Spanish rice, his favorite, and homemade tortillas. Then Buck arrived and claimed he'd had nothing but a bowl of cornflakes for dinner. It put a damper on the entire evening. After he left, Lindy had me feeling so guilty that I made him a plate of leftovers and drove over to Tom's place. That was a mistake. He lured me into his room and it took all my strength to refuse him sex. It would have been so easy to fall into bed with him, Jillian. So easy. When I'm not at work, I have no adult companionship, and I'm dying of loneliness. Some nights I just crave the feel of his arms around me. We had problems in our marriage, but for the most part, the sex was good. Halfway home, I weakened. I sat and thought about it for several minutes, then decided to go back. I intended to invite him to the house for the night. I didn't want this to become a regular thing, but I was lonely and my resolve was fragile. Oh, Jillian, what a good lesson that was. When I got to Tom's, there was another car in the driveway. I parked and peeked in the basement window, and sure enough, there was a woman with Buck. In the space of 30 minutes, he had another woman in his bed. This was exactly the prompting I needed to proceed with the divorce. This marriage is over. I'm calling Janice Bright today and filing the last of the paperwork. I should feel a sense of relief, I suppose, but I don't. Instead, all I feel is sad. So terribly, terribly sad. Keep in touch, and don't worry about your mother. She's going to be fine, and so will I. Love, Leslie. 1980. Jillian's Journal. January 1st, 1980. Dear Nick and Dad, the thought of you two together never fails to bring a smile to my face. It's been a comfort to me in the last 18 months to imagine Nick waiting to greet you when you passed into the afterlife. I picture Nick standing there, dressed as I remember him best, in his black leather jacket, looking like Joe Cool. Then you arrive and Nick sees you and extends his hand, offering his friendship as he so often tried before. Then I envision you looking at Nick's outstretched hand, and instead of exchanging handshakes, you hug. What a creative imagination I have. Still, it gives me a sense of peace to think of the two of you, looking down on me, knowing how much I love you both. Another decade starts today. I can only speculate on what the 1980s hold for us. Lenny Jo is the joy of our lives. She's a cheerful, happy child and very bright. Oh, Daddy, how I wish you'd had the chance to see her and hold her. Every day she does something that reminds me of you. The little frown when she's puzzled, the grave expression on her face as she's concentrating on one of her picture books, the delighted laughter when something amuses her. Mom's the perfect grandmother. She'd love to spend more time with Lenny Jo, but that's difficult, so she spoils her. Mom's biggest competition in the Who Can Spoil Lenny Jo the Most contest is my husband. Speaking of Monty, I'm worried about him. He's working far too many hours, especially since the American embassy hostages were taken in Iran. This is so outrageous. It infuriates me that something like this could happen. To make things even worse, the Iran situation appears to be having a ripple effect throughout the federal government, and as a result, Monty is working a great deal of overtime. Some nights he isn't home until long after Lenny Joe's asleep and I'm in bed. He has most of his meals out. When he is home, he's wiped out, emotionally and physically. I've insisted he go in for a physical right after the first of the year. I'm back to working 3 days a week. We have a wonderful nanny for Lenny Joe. I love my job, but I'm constantly wondering if I'm doing the right thing in leaving my daughter's care to someone who's essentially a stranger. I never expected to feel this emotional tug whenever I walk out the door. Perhaps this guilt is the result of having been raised Catholic, but I tend to think every mother experiences these ambivalent feelings, torn between being a good mother and a good employee. I suppose that eventually it will be easier, particularly once Lenny Joe's at school. I know Monty would prefer that I gave up practicing law for a few years, but I'm afraid I'd go stir-crazy at home. I need the intellectual stimulation, the interaction with other adults. My coworkers assure me it's better for Lenny Joe, too. But these women are mothers themselves, and they've had to justify leaving their own children. I don't know how Leslie does it. Monty and I have one baby, and Lenny Joe ran us ragged for the first 6 months. Neither of us got a full night's sleep. We were forever checking to make sure she was still asleep, and still breathing. As new parents, we experienced every fear out there. It took us all those sleepless months to figure out we were the ones waking her up. Leslie did everything practically by herself. Buck was no help. With four children. Four! I am in awe of my best friend. I don't know how she managed. Correction. Manages. Now that she's divorced, Leslie is making a new life for herself. She's attending Puget Sound Community College every morning and working toward a nursing degree. The convalescent center gave her a glowing recommendation, and she has a part-time job with a physician in the afternoons. I'd hoped that once she was free of her useless ex-husband, she'd start dating again. To my disappointment, she hasn't. I was afraid Buck might still be in the picture, but she assures me he isn't. I think Leslie's frightened of dating again. I wish she'd meet someone who deserves her. She never did write Roy Kloster, even after I encouraged her. My friend should follow her own mother's example. I don't mean to imply that she should date or marry an ex-priest, but I do wish she'd put her marriage behind her and search for some real happiness. From what I understand, Buck is still around. He sees the kids when it's convenient for him, and that isn't often. Long before Buck and Leslie were divorced, she came up with ways of paying the bills without relying on him. She baked and sold her own bread, became a remarkable seamstress, and offered daycare. She still got those extra sources of income, except for looking after kids. And it's a good thing, too, because God knows she's not getting much support from Buck. He was never inclined to work if he could avoid it. I hear he's got a different woman every week, but still comes to Leslie when he's down and out. She listens, pats his hand, and tells him everything's going to work out, then sends him on his way. Thankfully, David is far more like Leslie than his father. He's studious and serious and quiet. Lindy is just the opposite. At 12, she's already a flirt and announced over Christmas that she intends to marry Greg Brady from the Brady Bunch or the Fonz from Happy Days. Doug is all boy and involved in soccer and softball, and sweet, sweet Christopher is in first grade. He lost his front tooth and lisps when he speaks. He kept pronouncing Santa as Santa. It was the cutest thing. Dad, you'll be pleased to know Mom's making new friends. She's terribly lonely, but she's met other widows and has joined that social circle. The ladies travel together, they've been on several brief trips to places like the Napa Valley and Victoria, British Columbia. Every Wednesday afternoon, they play canasta. One day last fall, Mom looked at your old painting easel and decided to try her hand at it. Dad, you'd be amazed at how talented she is. I remember you enjoyed your art, especially your oil landscapes, but I never dreamed Mom had an artist's soul, too.
Nick, you're an uncle.
Jim and Angie had a baby boy in October. They named him Ryan Patrick. He's a chubby one, with a birth weight of over 10 pounds. Jim was so pleased and proud, he phoned me from the hospital just minutes after Angie delivered. We stay in touch and speak often. I love Jim like a brother. This is the report of my life for another year. Remember how much I love you both. Jillian.
Park West Medical, 284 Central Park West, Suite 1A, New York City, New York, 10024. February 11, 1980. Dear Mr. Gordon, the results of the blood work from your physical examination have been received from our laboratory, and everything looks to be in order. Dr. Lyman has granted you a clean bill of health for the upcoming year. Sincerely, Joan McMahon, RN.
Leslie Knowles. March 10, 1980. Mr. Cole Greenberg. ABC News Network, 7 West 66th Street, New York, New York, 10023.
Dear Cole, I don't know if you'll receive this letter, but after watching the news today, I felt compelled to write. We met in 1967 on a beautiful Hawaiian beach. You were a Navy officer, and I was a young wife who'd flown to the island to meet my husband. That was 13 years ago, and I've never forgotten those few hours we shared, talking and laughing. In all the years before or since, I've never bonded with anyone quite the way I did with you that magical morning. A few years back, by chance, I happened to catch you on national television reporting the news. It thrilled me to see how well you've done. Just this evening, I saw you again, reporting on the hostages in Iran. Each time I see you on the news, I feel a renewed sense of pleasure and pride. I realize it's presumptuous of me to contact you, and I hope you'll forgive me for intruding on your life after all these years. I wanted to let you know how happy I am about your success. You told me back in Hawaii that becoming a television news reporter was your goal, and you've managed to achieve that on a national level. Congratulations. Like all Americans, I'm praying for the hostages in Iran. I pray for your safety, too. I've never forgotten you. Sincerely, Leslie Knowles.
From Cole Greenberg, ABC Television News Correspondent. Date, April 17, 1980. Dear Leslie, of course I remember you. How could I forget the most stimulating conversation during my entire tour of Vietnam? I would have answered you immediately, but the mail here in Tehran is understandably unpredictable. I, too, have thought of you often over the years. You didn't tell me anything about yourself, but I assume, since you wrote, that you're single. I am as well. Constant traveling isn't conducive toward developing long-term relationships. I know this sounds a little crazy, but there were times I faced a camera wondering if you'd see me and what you'd think. I can't tell you how pleased I am that you've contacted me. So you're living in Washington State. I understand Mount St. Helens is making rumbling noises. As a senior reporter, I'm given a choice of assignments. If at all possible, I'll see what I can do to steer a path to your mountain. Nothing seems to be happening with the hostages. There's been speculation about a rescue attempt, but if it hasn't happened by now, it probably won't. Write again, and I'll be in touch as soon as I'm stateside. Sincerely, Cole Greenberg.
Jillian Lawton Gordon, 331 West End Avenue, Apartment 1020, New York, New York, 10023. April 25th, 1980. Dearest Leslie, you heard back from Cole Greenberg? I'm so excited I can hardly stand it. I'm trying to remember every word you read me over the phone. I knew it had to be something big for you to call, but this is bigger than big. I'm sorry I couldn't talk longer. What are you going to do now? Answer him, right? You have to. Oh, Leslie, this reminds me of when we were in high school. I got such a giddy, happy feeling just listening to the excitement in your voice. It seems like a very long time since I heard you this enthusiastic about anything. Isn't it dreadful what happened yesterday? The failed rescue attempt in Iran was humiliating. 8 brave, good men died a horrible, fiery death in that helicopter.
It brought back memories of when I lost Nick. I couldn't even watch the news. I held Lenny Jo close to my heart, wanting to protect her from all the horrors in this world. I can't. I know that. With this latest crisis, it appears Cole might be stuck in Iran for a while. Let me know as soon as you hear from him again. Oh, how I pray the hostages will be released soon. Are you following the campaign news? Believe it or not, I like what I'm hearing from Ronald Reagan. I can only imagine how happy my father would be if he even suspected I was thinking of voting Republican. Call me the minute you hear from Cole Greenberg. Promise. Jillian.
May 12th, 1980. Dear Daddy, Mommy's got a boyfriend. He calls her on the phone and he writes her long letters. I thought you should know. Love, Lindy.
Barbara Lawton, 2330 Country Club Lane, Pine Ridge, Washington, 98005. May 20th, 1980. My dearest Jillian, Monty, and Lenny Jo. I'm fine, children. I don't want you to worry. Mount St. Helens eruption was terrifying, although we should have seen it coming. The mountain has been dormant since 1857, and despite recent activity, no one expected anything of this magnitude. Certainly not our governor. Dixie Lee Ray recently opened up an area of the mountain that had been closed off because of the rumbling and earthquakes. That was a mistake that cost people's lives. I don't mind telling you, all of this has shaken me badly. Ash fell heavily across the eastern half of the state. The newscast showed incredible scenes of raging rivers and devastating mudslides. The city of Yakima was as dark as night, with ash raining down like something from a biblical plague. I read in the paper this morning that the National Guard is going to help the families shovel off their rooftops. You wouldn't believe what a mess all that ash has created. I'm so grateful the western half of the state was spared. All we had here in Pine Ridge was a light dusting. Never having lived through a volcanic eruption, I wasn't sure what to expect. I thought we'd see lava flows the way you do on the big island of Hawaii. This horrid ash took everyone by surprise. Did you hear that at last count there were 60 deaths attributed to the eruption? How terribly unfortunate and how tragic, since some of them at least could have been prevented. Thank you for your phone calls, but as I said, there's no need to concern yourselves. It looks as though the worst of it has passed. In the enclosed baggie is a sample of ash. An enterprising young man in the neighborhood brought some back with him. He and his wife drove to the Yakima and Ellensburg area to collect ash to use for figurines. They're new to the neighborhood. Both Skip and his wife are artists, and I wish them well in this venture. Who knows what will come of it? Love, Mom. Leslie Knowles. June 5th, 1980. Dear Cole, thank you for your call. It didn't matter that it came in the middle of the night. I was awake anyway, trying to figure out who shot J.R. It's wonderful to hear your voice anytime. As I explained, we're none the worse for wear following the eruption. The children are upset because we got so little of the ash. Dougie would have considered it a real windfall, so to speak. Heaven only knows what he would have done with it, but knowing my son, he would have thought of something. My David, the most enterprising of the four, raises guinea pigs. He's got quite a thriving business, selling them to pet stores. The guinea pigs do all the work, and he collects the money. That's an interesting concept. He's the animal lover in the family. I've been forced to limit him to one dog and one cat and, of course, the two guinea pigs. I'm sure you've heard of President Carter's decision to boycott the Moscow Olympics. The Soviets are learning more than one hard lesson in Afghanistan without us snubbing them like this. They should have learned from our mistakes in Vietnam. I've never been a political person, but I think this is wrong. The Olympics shouldn't be about politics. Anything new with the hostages? The days must seem endless to them. They continue to be in my prayers. You too. Yours, Leslie. DWI for Buck Knowles. The undersigned certifies and says that in the state of Washington, driver's license number, Knowles star DA461TB, state, Washington, expires 575. ID, number 533246009. Name, last, Knowles. First, David. Initial, J. Address, Knotty Pines Trailer Court. City, Pine Ridge. State, Washington. Zip code, 98005. Employer, Pine Ridge Lumber Mill. Race, white. Sex, M. Date of birth, 022843. Height, 6.1. Weight, 200. Eyes, blue. Hair, brown. Residential phone, 206-458-0522. Violation date, month, 06, day, 10, year, 80, time, 1:05 a.m. At location, Columbia Street. City, County of, King. Did operate the following vehicle, motor vehicle, on a public highway and vehicle license number 259-TIM, State, Washington, expires 0682. Vehicle year, 1974. Make, Ford. Model, Pinchot. Style, two-door. Color, brown. Did then and there commit the following offenses. Operate a motor vehicle while intoxicated. Appearance date, month, 06, day, 18, year, 80, time, 9:30 a.m. Date issued, 06-10-80. Without admitting having committed each of the above offenses, I promise to respond as directed on this notice. Defendant. I certify under penalty of perjury, under the laws of the State of Washington, that I have issued this on the date and at the location above, that I have probable cause to believe the above-named person committed the above offenses, and my report written on the back of this document is true and correct. Officer.
July 6, 1980. Dear Leslie, I imagine it's a surprise getting a letter from your ex-husband. I'm in a rehab center. The court sent me here after my second drunk driving charge. I'm not proud of that, but then there's a great deal in this life I regret. I'm working with a counselor and have been dry for 2 weeks. My head is starting to clear and I realize what a mess I've made of my life. The counselor tells me that unless I'm willing to be honest with myself, there's no hope of ever kicking the booze. I didn't know honesty was this damned hard. I've been doing a lot of talking and soul-searching. You and the kids are the best thing that ever happened to me. I know I've told you that before. It was true then, and it's even truer now. There are things I never told you about my childhood. I'm not offering any of this as an excuse, but I feel you have a right to know. Working with the staff here, I've been able to face my past, and most of it is ugly. My dad didn't die when I was young. He deserted my mother and us three kids. Another thing I lied about was how my mother worked to make ends meet. She hooked on the side to put food on the table for my two older sisters and me. By the time Anne and Lois were in their teens, Mom had grown hard and mean, and she set them up with John's. She kicked me out when she found me stealing money from her purse to buy beer. She slapped me around some and then threw me into the street and said that was where I belonged. She was probably right. Soon afterward, I drifted into Pine Ridge and got a job at the mill. I heard from Lois a few years after Mom died. Anne came down with a liver ailment at 30 and never recovered. No one knows what caused it, but the doctors told my sister it had something to do with her immune system. When I met you and your family, I couldn't get over how you all looked after one another. No one looked after me. Your father was one of the best drinking buddies I ever had. When you agreed to date me that first time, I nearly burst with pride. You've always been a classy girl, and you being interested in a lowlife like me gave me hope that I might turn into something good. I never wanted you to know about my past. I never wanted anyone to know. It's funny how life catches up with you, isn't it? It sure as hell caught up with me. I lost you and the kids, and painful as this is to admit, I realize I'm to blame for everything. I pulled a lot of stunts while we were married. Emptying out your savings account to buy that hunting rifle is only the tip of the iceberg. There were other women, Leslie, more than I care to remember. But not a one of them meant anything to me. I know that doesn't excuse cheating on you, but even when I was with someone else, it was always you I loved. When you left me the first time, I went into a panic. I couldn't believe you'd actually follow through with it. And I thanked God 1,000 times over when you agreed to take me back.
I tried, baby. I really did. For you and the kids, I managed to stay sober for a year. Maybe more. I don't remember exactly how long it was, but longer than any period before or since. This last time, I knew you meant to go ahead with the divorce. You had a look in your eye that told me nothing was going to change your mind. I didn't fight you as hard because I knew I deserved to have you walk out on me. My life's been on a downward spiral since that day. No one's ever loved me like you did. No one ever cared what happened to me. Not my bastard of a father and not my bitch of a mother. Only you. And I killed that love because of the way I treated you. I understand you have a new man in your life. I only hope he treats you better than I did. I hope he appreciates you. Thank you for reading this, Leslie. I'm going to make a determined effort to be a better father to my children. They've got the best damn mother in the world, and it's time I showed them I'm capable of being a good father. I might have failed you as a husband, but I'm not going to fail my children. Buck.
July 10th, 1980. Dear Dad, Mom said you were in the hospital. I hope you get well soon. I have a paper route now, but I only have to deliver 2 days a week. It's mostly advertisements and some local news. Mrs. Dalton gave me a $1 tip when I went to collect. I'm saving my money to help Mom. I hope you're better soon. David Knowles.
544 Klondike Avenue, number 304. Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701. August 1st, 1980. Dear David, Lindy, Doug, and Christopher. Thank you for your cards and letters while I was in the hospital. They meant a lot to me. I'm feeling great now. Thank your mother for me, too. I'm going to be much better now. I heard about a job in Alaska, and that's where I'm living. The money is good, and if I get on this crew, I'll be able to send a check to your mother on a regular basis. I love you. Be good for your mom. Love, Dad.
Jillian Lawton Gordon, 331 West End Avenue, Apartment 1020, New York, New York, 10023. October 3rd, 1980. Dearest Leslie and kids, it was so good to hear from you. It's been far too long. We can't let this much time go by without at least a quick phone call. Life just doesn't seem to slow down for me. I know it's the same for you. You're a marvel. You always have been. I didn't fully appreciate everything you accomplished until Monty and I had Lenny Joe. By the way, I've learned something about Monty that completely took me by surprise. He wasn't free to tell me until a few days ago, but he's been deeply involved in the Abscam investigation. That's the reason he was working so much overtime during the past few months. His office cooperated with the FBI to catch legislators taking bribes from rich Arabs. Just this afternoon, Representative Myers was expelled from Congress, the first member since 1861. Now that the worst of it is over, he's taking a vacation at my insistence. We both desperately need one. Lenny Joe barely knows her father. This is incredible news about Buck. He's actually paying you child support? I don't know how he managed to get that job in Alaska, but I'm grateful he's taking some responsibility for supporting his children. Just beware, Leslie. We both know him, and a leopard doesn't change his spots. His intentions might be good now, but don't forget how unreliable he's always been. You haven't mentioned our friendly international newscaster lately. What do you hear from Cole? I realize he's probably traveling back and forth between New York and Tehran, but surely he's been able to squeeze in a trip to the West Coast? Tell me everything. Thanks for checking up on my mother. The Mount St. Helens eruption is the first time she's had to deal with anything major since we lost my dad, and she appears to be handling things quite well. I don't know what I'd do if I had to rely on strangers for information about her. I know you aren't afraid of telling me the truth about her condition. I only wish I could get back to Pine Ridge more often. We'll be there for Christmas, and you and I can talk then. I do worry about her. I'm sorry this is so short. Keep in touch. Monty and I send our love. Lenny Joe, too. Jillian.
Leslie's Journal. October 21st, 1980. The kids got another letter from Buck.
They love hearing from their father and get so excited when the mail brings them even the briefest of communications. Dougie and Christopher immediately sat down and wrote him back. I found David reading his